You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's up, fellas? Welcome back to Convos Over Cold Brew with me, your host, Emma Abrahamson. Today we're talking to Mick Stanovsek, and he was my old teammate at the University of Oregon way back in the day, a few years ago. And now he is currently running under the same coach, Andy Powell, at the University of Washington. If you listened to the episode with Dylan Sorensen last week, we mentioned Mick at the end, and it got me thinking that I really need to have Mick on the podcast to share his story. I don't want to give too much away of the story, but basically to give a little reference so that you guys will listen all the way through, he tried to walk on the University of Oregon, was cut, made the team, and eventually now he runs a 3:56 mile and is a multiple-time All-American. So that is a huge summary of the story, but stay tuned for the entire story. Like, it is crazy and it gets better as time goes on, so let's just get straight into it. All right, Mick, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for coming on. It's been a little while since we talked. I miss our conversations, but to start off, can you just give us a rundown of who you are and what you're about?
Yeah, it's been a while. It's good to talk to you again. My name is Mick Stanovsek. I'm an upcoming sixth year at University of Washington track and field. Currently, I'm in Seattle. I previously ran at University of Oregon, where I walked on after my freshman year with Coach Andy Powell. And through that whole process, him and I kind of got pretty close, and that's why I followed him up to Washington. But originally from Cleveland, Ohio, city of champions. I need to throw that out there. And also, yeah, like half Australian. I grew up there as a kid. That's me.
I was wondering your ties to Australia, because I never really, you know, learned about that, but like, how long did you live there for, and when did you live there?
Really, I like have no ties. I just like it, you know. No, my dad is born and raised there, and I have quite a bit of family out there. So I lived there just for a few years as I was growing up, like when I was like 1, 4, and 7. And I've gone back a few times and have some siblings living there now. So,
yeah. Oh, so you definitely have ties then?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I was just kidding. That'd be crazy if I just like pick the country and then I'm like, yep, that's part of me now.
Yeah. Yeah. So what brought you to Oregon?
Steve Prefontaine. It's a pretty easy answer. I did a book report on him in eighth grade. And I think just through doing that and through learning all about Pre and the aura around him, I definitely got sucked in. I stand super hard during high school, many of my fellow high school runners. I think I just sort of decided in eighth grade that I was going to go to Oregon. And regardless of whether I was fast enough, I was going to try and make it on.
Nice. And so can you take us a little bit through like your running journey, like how you got your start, and I guess up until like you got to Oregon, like, can you just kind of run through that?
Yeah. So I was slow. I wasn't, I was like, not, I shouldn't say that. Cause I mean, you know, there's people out there.
It's relative.
Right. It's relative. Yeah. But I, relative to Oregon standards, or really many D1 standards, I wasn't a highly sought after recruit. Freshman and sophomore year of high school, I actually lived in North Carolina. And I made it to the state meet a couple times. Like, my folks, just we moved down there. And then we moved back up to Cleveland again for my junior and senior year of high school. And yeah, made the state meets a couple more times. I think I came third in the 1600 and fourth in the 800 at the state meet my senior year of high school. And at the time, my PRs were 155, I think, and 415 in the mile.
Okay, but those are still pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. So, but that's like pretty late in the recruiting process. That's like 3 months from stepping onto campus.
Yeah.
Like, I guess for more context, my mile PR going into my senior year of high school, so probably March of 2015, when I was going to be going to college in September 2015, was 435 or 434.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, I was a slowpoke. And I mean, just during that, or actually it wouldn't have been March, it would have been January, because that indoor season I worked really hard, and I realized that I had to, I don't know, get to work if I wanted to get Coach Powell to look at me at all as a possible walk-on. And so, yeah, I whittled that 435 down to 424, then 419, and then outdoors I ended up getting at 419 down to 415. And after the state meet, actually, there's a meet called the Midwest Meet of Champions, which is between Ohio, Michigan, and Indiana. And I was on the, and that's just for post high school runners who just finished the state meet. And I was on the alternate list for that. I didn't even like make the team for the Ohio miler team, because they only choose 3 guys. Just to give you a context of how unimpressionable I was in high school as a runner. And then, yeah, it turned out that some guy got sick, who was supposed to run the 1600 at that meet. So like the day or 2 days before that meet, I got a call from the meet director asking if I wanted to be on the 1600 meter Ohio team. So I'm like, oh yeah, sure. And I was pretty bad in high school as far as like morally, I did like some question, like I would get into some like partying and stuff. And
yeah,
I just was, I mean, as sure, hopefully some of your listeners might be able to relate to that a little bit.
Mischievous, Mick.
A little mischievous. I got it out. I got it out of my system before I went to college, which I think in the long run has maybe helped me, but definitely put some pressure on my mom's. But yeah, I remember I was like at a party when he called, and it was like 2 days before the race, and I was not in any sort of state to be like thinking about running or any of that. And I'm like, oh, sure. And then, yeah, I ended up like the next day, woke up at a friend's house, drove down to Wesleyan College in Ohio, and then like checked into the dorms. And the next day I ran at that race, and I ended up winning in 4:10 somehow.
And, holy moly, Mick.
Yeah, it was like a huge breakout. And I remember like the Team Ohio, we all getting to know each other, and they're like, oh yeah, say where you're going to college and blah, blah, blah. And I stood up and like, oh, I'm going to University of Oregon. And everyone's like, yeah. Okay, sure. And then I ran 4:10, and I think a couple of people may have like converted them into believers, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was pretty much high school. Actually, before my senior year, I met Coach Andy Powell for the first time, because I had gone to an Oregon track camp.
Okay.
And so that's kind of where like I got some directional ideas as to what sort of times I might need to run.
So did you have, you just like knew that you were going to Oregon? It didn't matter like if other schools were going to give you offers, you just knew that you were going to go there regardless of if you were going to make the team or not?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely, I applied to other colleges just to see, probably more of like an ego thing, just to say that I got into some of these colleges, you know?
Yeah.
But I think my mindset in high school was, you know, I'm 18 and this is the only thing I've ever wanted since I was like 12, and this is the only time I'll ever be able to actually go for that. And so why don't I just try it for a year and give it everything I have. And, if I don't know, the universe wants it to be so, then it'll be so. But yeah, I mean, my mindset was, yeah, this is where I'm going. This is what I've only ever wanted to do. So why not go ahead and try and do it, you know?
Man, that's a lot to do, to like bet on yourself when you're that young. That takes a lot of guts.
You know, Northeast Ohio, That's that grind culture. LeBron James said, in Northeast Ohio, nothing is given, everything's earned.
Oh, man. All yeah. right.
So this is the way we're born and bred, you know, Emma.
Oh, I see. I wouldn't know. You know, I don't think I've ever been to Ohio, but maybe I should go.
You Californians, yeah. You know.
Too laid back.
Off into Mogno. Two surfer, you know?
Yeah. What was, like, your fallback plan? Say it didn't work out. Like, what were you going to study? Like, did you have any sort of other direction?
That's a good question. I probably would have just ended up back at Ohio State, and I don't even know if I would have wanted to run anymore. I just was so tied to this idea of running at Oregon that running anywhere else kind of just paled in comparison, and so... A lot of my homies back in Cleveland used to skate, and so I probably would have just like fallen back into like skateboarding and just going to class and being being a little skate rat.
So you think you would have transferred back to Ohio State?
Yeah, there was actually a time during my freshman year at Oregon when I didn't think I was going to be able to make it, and I was filling out some transfer applications to Ohio State and to University of Melbourne, where my oldest brother went to college in Australia. So those are like the two other options.
Oh my gosh, Mick, this is so interesting to me. Like, I knew kind of like a little bit of a background about your story just from articles that were written, but man, you like really bet on yourself. But I mean, it turned out well.
Thank you.
So now let's get into college. So it's your freshman year. Take us through the process. You get on the campus. What happens?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I emailed Andy after that 410, and he's probably just like, this kid's still emailing me. So he's like, all right, I'll throw him a bone. And he said, yeah, if you're still coming to Oregon, email me when you get on a campus and we'll meet up. And so I emailed him. We set up a time. I landed in Eugene, got moved into Bean Hall. Shout out to all the Bean Hall homies. Worst dorm in Oregon. Not anymore. It got renovated, but when I was there, it was the worst. I met Andy in Bowerman, and I was like shaking in my boots. I was just like so nervous because I thought that this is it. This is like when he's going to tell me yes or no. And he ended up having me and Connor Hayward. I don't know if you recall him.
I think I met him.
Yeah, he's a super nice kid. But so he had both of us in there. And I think he ended up telling Connor that the club team was best for him. And I think Connor ended up really enjoying that route. So that was good for him. And then it was just me and Andy left in the room, and I'm like, oh man, now he's just going to like give me the slip and tell me to piss off. But no, he didn't. He was like really encouraging. He said, you know, like I respect the fact that you've kept in contact with me. And, so we're going to have a tryout for you. And so he set up a couple of times that I would come into practice at Oregon and try out with the team. And so I remember the first tryout that I did was like a 6 or 7 mile tempo run on Priest Trail.
I remember too.
At 90. Yeah. Everyone on the team remembers that because literally that workout has never happened before or since. It was literally just like, I know, it was like a workout that Andy chose to do just to like make sure that I wouldn't get on the team or something. I don't know.
Actually, we were like, oh my gosh, like this poor kid is trying out. Like, this is cruel. The guys have never done that long of a workout. It was so hot, and it was on Priest Trail. I was like, it couldn't be any worse for this guy right now.
And I remember like there's that, you know, that long part of the 2.5 mile loop on Priest that you're kind of like, yeah, you're like going down river and it's just super long and hot. And I remember I was like getting dropped by like Kyle Levermore and maybe Chris Mulverhill. And I was just like, I had this thought in my head, like I had a moment with myself where I'm like, I am watching my dream run away from me right now. And it was like really sad. And I'm like, this is like, Mick, you need to like do something, like get out of this funk and crush this workout. Cause this is literally like right there is your chance to be a duck, and it's running away from you literally. But yeah, I didn't, I died hard. Legs went lactic as you say. and then Andy's like, you know what, don't sweat it. You still have a few more tryouts to go. And, I ended up having four or five tryouts. And like two of them went well. And I think either two or three of them didn't. And so the whole time Andy, Coach Powell, he was talking to me through email and stuff. And at one point he said, yeah, I don't think we have a spot for you on the cross team, but yeah, just stay in contact with me. And maybe we can find something for you in the spring.
Man.
Yeah.
That's
so that
crazy.
Was my fall. Yeah. That was my fall.
And then I remember like very distinctly in the winter, you working out with Sheila Reed all the time.
Yeah, that was cool. So then that's kind of actually like the turning point of like, there was like that of this, like in the movies, there's like the super low, and that low was, it was a specific moment that has to do with balloons, of like the saddest moment at Oregon, because I went up to Seattle to race, in the winter. So I was pretty much since that point, I was just like running like 70 or 80 miles a week, all alone on pre's, just kind of hammering it out, taking my classes, was very driven. And I thought I was in pretty good shape. So I, loaded my bike onto a Greyhound bus and went up to race in the UW preview. Which is kind of funny that now that I go to UW, so it's kind of come full circle. But I didn't know how far downtown Seattle was from UW. Oh, so no. When I got off the bus, it was like 10 o'clock at night, the night before the race. And I'm like in downtown Seattle. So I like biked from like the 9 miles from downtown uphill to campus. Yeah. And I remember Andy saying, yeah, if you can try and, get some 200s in before the race. And like, obviously like now that I'm older, I'm like, Mick, just go to bed. You had a long day of travel, but I was like, I was young, I was impressionable. And so I'm like, all right, I gotta do these 200s. So like I snuck into the Dempsey somehow, like all the lights were off and I just
did
two 200s at like 11 PM. Then like got to my Airbnb, went to bed, next day raced the mile, like 4:20 or like 4:19 or something.
Oh, no.
Just totally bombed it. And it was actually my birthday.
Nick,
yeah,
it's getting worse.
No, it's just like the saddest story ever. And so I'm like, man, this sucks. Like I'm like thousands of miles from anyone I know. And, well, I obviously had some friends back on campus, but just, was still developing those relationships. And so I'm like, you know, I'm just going to go back down to Eugene. This is a bus. Maybe this isn't meant to be. And so I found an earlier bus cause I was going to run the 3K later that day. And so I took the bus, rode my bike back down from campus to downtown. As I pull up to the bus station, the bus pulls off. So I missed that bus. So I'm like tight. I would say it started to rain just to make it like perfect. But
yeah,
it didn't. It didn't rain. So I just like, I went into this pub and got a burger and I was like just eating burger and some fries. And I looked at my watch. I'm like, well, I mean, the 3K is in like an hour and a half. So I got on my bike and I rode back up to campus the 9 miles. And I'm like saying this now, I'm like, what the hell was I thinking? So then I raced a 3K and that was also not great. I don't think I like bombed as bad as you would think. I probably ran like 8:40 something, like not awesome. I can't remember. I'm sure people can look it up, but yeah, still not great. So I was like taking off my spikes and I sort of knew the guys on the Oregon team because I would be like the weird guy hanging around Hayward all the time, you know,
that whole
first year. And so it was, Chris Brewer was at this meet and apparently Chris Brewer and I have the same birthday. And so I was like super dejected, like looking for bus routes on my phone as I was taking my spikes off after I bombed this 3K, second race of the day that I bombed. And like Chris Brewer's parents come like walking through the Dempsey doors with like a bunch of balloons and presents for him that like say happy birthday. And I'm just like, oh my God, this is so sad. And like, they're like, happy birthday. And of course, like that's nice for Chris. Like he's allowed to celebrate too. It's not all about me, but like, I was just like a bummer, like sitting right next to him. And like that happened. I'm like, all right, I'm just going to get back on my bike and go downtown again.
Oh my gosh.
It doesn't end there. So
okay. Keep going.
I got a bus from Seattle to Portland and I misread it and it only took me to Portland. And so I got into Portland at like midnight. So like my birthday is over at this point, like no delusions of grandeur for how my birthday is going to go this year. Like it came and went. And so I didn't know how to get to Eugene and I was like stuck in Portland at midnight. So I posted on Craigslist, like this super sad story of like, please, it's my birthday. I just want to get down to Eugene.
Mick, I can't.
Like willing to do anything. No, I didn't say that. But basically, that's probably how some people could have construed it. And this one woman ended up messaging me. And she's like, hey, like, I can take you down to Eugene. Sure. And I'm like, all right, this is going to be interesting. And she turned out to be like such a nice lady. She's like in her 30s. I can't remember her name. But we had like an incredible conversation for like 2 hours and like she dropped me off at my dorm at like 3 a.m. and we ended up getting coffee like a few months later or something. It was like just a really weird, super like Portland person, you know, who's just like, you know, like, yeah, why not drive this kid down and I'll personally get home at 6 a.m. Like, that's probably what happened to her. But yeah, that was it was a pretty sad day. And then at that point, I was getting back to what you said about Sheila Reed and Oregon Track Club. That's when I started filling out applications to transfer, because that was just such a disheartening experience overall, from racing to birthdays and all that. And so as I was sort of looking into transferring and possibly losing hope for the first time in myself since, like seventh grade or eighth grade, that this might be a thing that I do. Coach Powell called me and he said, come into the Bowerman. Yeah. He like asked me how the UW meets went. And I'm like, you don't want to know. And he's like, okay, well, Mark Rowland with the Oregon Track Club, he needs someone to pace his women, 'cause he has this 800 woman, who she's an up and comer. And at the time, none of us knew who she was, but we all know her name is Francine Niansaba now. And she's the Olympic silver medalist from Rio. Sheila Reed, those two girls need pacemakers if you'd be willing. I'm like, oh yeah, sure. That'd be great. And, that's kind of when things started to turn around for me, because I met Mark, and he was super nice, and he often would have me pace the entire women's workouts of like either Francine's or Sheila Reed's. And after that, he would give me like some extra, he'd throw me a bone and throw me a few extra reps to do. And so that's kind of when my training started to get a lot more regimented and really coached, because beforehand Andy would occasionally like send me a workout to do, and I would just like repeat that workout until it got old. And so yeah, this is when things sort of started to pick up, and I got to like spend my days around like runners like Mac Fleet and Hassan Mead and Ben Blankenship and all these guys who I had like practically had posters of on my wall like just 9 months before. I was now like showing up to practice with, and occasionally I could even hop in with some of the guys once I kind of gained their trust and was a good pacemaker for them. And so yeah, that was like a super, super positive experience for me, and that kind of carried me through the spring.
And then after that, like, when did you officially join the Oregon team, and take us through the process of like what your thoughts were when Andy let you on the team?
So that happened. The whole spring I ran like 3:49 the 1500, I think, which wasn't good enough, or maybe 3:50. And I was, again, thinking like, I'm really like looking down the barrel of failing again. There's like a ton of times throughout that whole year where, like failure was just kind of looming over me. And luckily I evaded it, but, Chris Mulverhill mentioned that he was going to, who's now a good friend of mine, who's on the Oregon team. He said he was going up to a track meet at Willamette University. And he asked if I wanted to come, and I didn't even think about doing that meet. I said, oh, sure. So I hopped in the car with him and went up. And throughout the whole process, Andy pretty much told me, if you can run practically a regional qualifying time in the 1500, like, then I'll allow you on the team, mm-hmm. Which at the time was around 3:45, 3:46, somewhere around there. I went up to Willamette, and I ended up racing. And I remember that was like the first time that I didn't even race thinking about like making the team or anything. I just like had such a long journey over the past 9 months that I just wanted to like go out and enjoy racing again, and just compete and not think about time and not think about trying to run 3:46, just run. And I ended up coming second in the race, and I ran 3:46. So it was like a 4 second PR, and like it blew it out of the water. And I had this like stupid smile on my face right after I finished, because like, I knew, like, I know Andy said 3:45, but I'm like, he cannot be that heartless to say like, nope, 3:46 doesn't count. And so I just remember there were a couple of moments over the next couple of days where just what I, what may be coming towards me was really sinking in. And I remember I was taking off my spikes, and I just like laid down on my back in the grass and was looking at the sky under the stadium lights. And I just was thinking like, this is the closest I've ever been to a dream. And it felt, I don't know, it was just so special to think that, I wasn't even concerned whether Andy would let me on the team at that point. I was just so, elated that I'd come so far and I had gotten so close, and I was just really honored to even be, where I was and to be running with the people I was running with. And I was just really, I had a heart full of gratitude at that point. And so the next day I had to leave for, North Carolina, 'cause my brother was graduating from Duke. And so I went to his graduation, and then the following day I got on a plane, and I remember I was late to my plane. I was like rushing through the airport, like literally sprinting, sweating buckets, like looking nasty, just to catch his flight. 'Cause it was in Raleigh, North Carolina, so it was pretty humid. And then I remember I was the last person on the flight. Everyone was like looking at me because they had been holding the plane for me. And my phone went off and I took it out of my pocket and I saw a 541 number, which is the Eugene area code. I'm like, okay, this is weird. Is this it? And so I answered the call and it was Andy. He says, hey, Mick, it's Andy. I'm like, oh, hey, how you doing? He goes, not much. Like, where are you? I'm like, oh, North Carolina. He goes, and he says, so 346, huh? And I go, oh, yeah. And he goes, so you ready to be a duck? And like, I just, like, I still have goosebumps thinking about it because no other feeling I've ever had in my life compares to the moment he said those words. And I just said, more than you know. And then he's like, all right, well, let me know when you get back to Eugene and come into the Bowerman. We'll do all the paperwork. And I remember just sitting down in my seat and I called my mom and I told her. And then as the plane took off and the ground kind of dropped beneath us, I just started bawling. And I just like cried my eyes out. And I just, because I was just kind of coming to the realization that for the first time in my life, I achieved like a goal, and I didn't move the post line. Like every time I would run, I always wished, oh, I ran 410. I wish I ran 409, or I came second in this race. I wish I came first. And this was just like a solid thing that I've wanted since I was like 11 or 12 years old. And it was a binary thing. Either I have it or I don't. And it was really just, I don't know. I just equate it to like never really achieving a goal in my life. And that was the first goal that I really achieved. And it was a really hard goal. And it was like a goal that I sacrificed a lot for. I left all my friends for. And yeah, so that was just like a guttural sob. And the people around me in the plane are probably like, what the hell is going on with this weirdo? But I just let it all out. And I cried and I couldn't believe, honestly couldn't believe it. And in those words, are you ready to be a duck, just rung in my ears for a little while. And then I remember going into practice and the next day at the Bowerman, and everyone was kind of giving me pats in the back and stuff, and it really felt like I'd made it at that point.
Oh my god, Mick, I literally have chills. I'm not even kidding, I have chills. And I'm like smiling behind my microphone right now.
Thanks.
Is like, gosh, there's literally no better feeling than accomplishing a goal like that. Like, I don't know how you stayed strong through all of those like super dramatic times. Like after the Dempsey situation, I don't know how like you kept going like that.
And it was made a lot more emotional by the fact that we had like some family issues with like my dad was kind of taken away from us for a little while, and he's back now, but it was just kind of like a lot of struggling through particularly like high school and that first year of college. A lot of my family thought I was maybe, it was a bit, I don't know, capricious or something to try and go after this just cause I like Steve Prefontaine. But I don't know, they did believe in me and just kind of prove myself. And I don't know, it just seemed like the ultimate test, I guess.
Yeah, well, you passed, so that is, gosh. Mick, this is, like, literally my favorite story in the entire running world.
Oh, please.
No, yeah, I'm not kidding. It really is. Like,
there's a lot of good stories out there.
I know.
Has Matt Senchowitz told you about when he almost got mauled by a dog on a run? Because that's a pretty good story, too.
Oh, I'll ask him. Next time I see him, I'll hit him up with...
I think it rivals.
Okay, I don't know. I got chills in this one, so.
Thanks.
Okay, well now you're at Oregon. And now there's a big difference from walking on to becoming an All-American. Mm-hmm. So there's a big mindset shift I feel like it needs to happen. Like, take us through the process of, you know, just barely making the team and then becoming an All-American.
I mean, you mentioned that there's a big mindset shift. I think for me there really wasn't a huge mindset shift, and I think that's kind of what helped with my success when I got to Oregon, is the fact that I sort of still had this walk-on mentality, I guess, and I still had a bit of a chip on my shoulder. Like, I knew a lot of my fellow runners on the team, as much as I respected them and I ended up loving all those guys, I knew they may have had not necessarily the most bumpy road like I did to get to where I was. And so I definitely was out to prove something. And at the same time, there was this lingering feeling that followed me throughout my first year at Oregon that like I sort of almost didn't belong, or I was, I don't know, I was, like a false, like a, I just wasn't, I don't know, I wasn't really supposed to be there, I guess.
Yeah.
And I remember that sort of accumulated in, those feelings accumulated at Penn Relays. My first year, Andy like shocked me by telling me that he was going to take me to Penn and he's going to have me run the 4x mile and the 800 leg of the DMR. And I'm like, oh God, are you sure? And he was sure. And he took me. And I remember the first day there's like thousands of people in the stands. And the second day there's like literally like, because USA races Jamaica, like 20,000 screaming Jamaicans just like in your face. And it's like awesome. And they love track and field and they're super knowledgeable about the sport. And so it's just a super intense feeling. And I just like the entire time I was there, I just felt like I was an imposter because I had seen like Ed Cheserek and Eric Jenkins and all these like great runners at Oregon before me who are representing Oregon at this like super high level. And I felt like, what the hell? Like a year ago, I was like biking through Seattle to get to meets. And like, I just didn't feel like I was totally there. And we ended up winning both the DMR and the mile 4x mile there. And I think that was kind of a point where that was a part of a mindset shift where I'm like, okay, like maybe I actually really do deserve to be here. And maybe this isn't just like some lucky thing that happened to me. But yeah, I mean, throughout that whole first year, I just kept trying to prove myself and to prove that I belonged on the team and that I can contribute. And I just wanted to help the team as best as I could. And when Coach Powell told me that he was going to let me onto the team, I remember telling him very vividly, I remember telling him like, I will do like literally anything you need me to do to help with the team. Like if you want me to run at NCAA cross and just pace the first 5K as hard as I possibly can just for Ed and then drop out and die, like that's fine, I'll do that. Or like if you want me to like just pace every race for this first year or first 2 years or whatever, just like however I can help make this program successful, I'll do that and I'll make myself useful. And so I was just very determined to in some way just make myself useful and to give Coach Powell the best argument for keeping me on the team. Like I didn't want to make it hard for him and Coach Johnson. I didn't want them to ever have a conversation like, should we keep this walk-on around?
Man, Nick, yeah. You're such a good teammate.
Oh,
gosh.
Please.
I literally, like, this is blowing my mind.
I never ended up doing any of those things, really. So,
okay,
not
well,
exactly
you...
in the team. I'll talk.
Okay. We know that you would do it in a heartbeat if Andy asked you to.
I would, yeah.
So, like, what was your first goal once you got on the team? Because I feel like when you have a goal, like, just to make the team mm-hmm. for your entire life and then you accomplish it, like, what is next? You know, I'm sure you had to sit down with yourself and be like, okay, now I'm here. Like, what do I want to accomplish for the next 4 or 5 or 6 years that I'm in the NCAA? What was the first goal that you had?
Yeah. First goal is that I wanted to run at Pac-12s at cross. And that didn't happen. That was probably like my first failure on the team is that I, didn't really produce any magnificent results throughout that cross season. But that's okay because I remember I still got like goosebumps when we were at Sun River training camp and Andy, like after the long run, we were jumping in the river and Andy's like, hey, Mick, like make sure you bring your singlet to Eugene because you're going to race. And I'm like, you mean in the varsity race? And then I remember Ryan Gill was there and he was just like laughing at me. He's like, what do you mean the varsity race? It's no AV races. This is like NCAA. And then Andy's like, yeah, the varsity race. And I'm like, oh my God. Like I'm racing in the first cross country meet for Oregon. And so, yeah, I mean, at first it was just like just a race. And then I don't think there was ever one moment where I just like sat down and was like, these are what I'm going for next. I think it was each season. I just kind of took it season by season because it was like so much to take in. And it was so different. It was so much more racing that I was doing and a lot more maybe attention to each race. And so then the next thing was I knew I wanted to be in the DMR at NCAAs. And I ended up running 1:48. On a DMR like that indoor season. And so I earned my spot there. And that was like another moment throughout that first year on the team of just disbelief as I was packing for the NCAA championships. Because, yeah, like I said, just a year before I was really hurting for a spot on the team. And then just a year later, packing up to represent the Ducks at NCAAs.
And it is really hard to get on like a relay team at Oregon at NCAAs. There's a lot of people vying for that position. So to make it your first year is very impressive.
I appreciate that. Thank you. And so, yeah, that was a goal achieved. And then outdoors came around, and Penn Relays wasn't even on my radar because I didn't think I'd be selected for that team. So then when that came and went, I'm like, okay, now it's time for Pac-12s. Let's try and win Pac-12s. I remember thinking and talking with Coach Powell, and he thought that the 800 meters was particularly not particularly competitive that year. And we thought that I might be able to win it, and it was at Hayward, so it could be at home. And so there's a lot of pressure there. Just like coming from where I was to racing Pac-12s at Hayward.
I can't even imagine.
and Coach Powell telling me that I might be able to win it. And I'll never forget this race because that's like the most stern Coach Powell has ever been with me after a race, because I made the final, no worries. And then the next day, he told me, Mick, wait till 80 meters to go. And with 80 meters to go, sprint and you will win. If you wait till 80 meters, like, of course, right? But like coaching how to run. So he's like, yeah, if you just wait till 80, you will win. And I remember just that redshirt freshman brain with like 250 to go, I'm like, oh, we're cruising, I can win this like right now. Shot to the lead with 200 meters to go, opened up like a 2 meter gap that was eviscerated like 3 seconds later, and I came fourth. And then Coach Powell, like, just put his arm around me after the race. He's like, so, if you don't want me to coach you, that's fine. Like, it seems like you're doing fine coaching yourself. And, like, he just gave me a hard time, which I certainly needed to have. And I think that actually cultivated a relationship between Coach Powell and I that has been the reason why I've been able to run successfully up until this point, is that he's kind of been hard on me. And I think that's particularly what I need in running is, I don't know, just sternness and high expectations. And he had that for me. And so he let me know after that race. And then after, like, he sort of chewed me out for a bit, he's like, all right, put your spikes on, you're running the 4x4. And I'm like, oh God.
Oh no.
And I didn't even know what I split. All I know is that I lost a lot of ground for our team and in front of Hayward. And like, as I finish, I walk up to Sam Prakel and Tim Gorman, and they're just like smiling at me like, do you want to know what you split? And I'm like,
no.
So I'm not going to tell anyone what I split. It was bad. and then I wanted to make NCAAs. Like I said, it was just sort of goals and phases, just trying to prove myself and try and, I don't know, align my goals with everyone else's on the teams. I didn't know why I should have any different goals than the best guys on our team. I thought maybe the point of me being there is that I should have those goals. And so I wanted to make NCAAs, and I fell short there. I made the regional final, and I remember it was in Austin. If you remember that was.
Oh, I remember, Mick. I remember.
That was rough. And it was like, what was it like? Was it 200 or 300 degrees?
I don't know. Might be 250 probably.
We'll split the difference. So it was 250 degrees and the humidity was 1000%, I think. And I remember all of us like 1 through 12 in this 1500 meter regional final, like, came with 400 meters to go with all within a second of each other. And I think we all split like 52 or something for our last lap, or 53, because we were just jogging before then. And nothing changed and got bumped out. And so I was disappointed, but, I don't know, like, just overall, I was, like I said, I was just, my heart was filled with gratitude for every chance that I got. And I think I earned another year. And yeah, I was All American too for the DMR. And so I got that under my belt, and yeah, things just sort of snowballed from there.
And this is kind of off topic. Well, not really. I mean, it still is aligned with running, but I think I was at the Dempsey this year when you ran. You were like the 100th person to
200.
Or was 200th person to break 4 in the mile.
Yeah. You know what? That is actually, like, I just thought about it now. That's so perfect, because balloons in the Dempsey were like the saddest
part
of that story. And then, yeah, this past indoor season, I got balloons in the Dempsey for going to sub-4 for the 200th time at the Dempsey. So, wow. Thank you for enlightening me on that.
Full circle. See, balloons, yeah. I think they're significant to you. Anytime balloons are around you, you need to be a little bit weird, you know?
Yeah, I just like my eyes rolled to the back of my head, and I just have like this PTSD moment, I guess.
Yeah. So take us through the first time you broke four in the mile.
Yeah, that was my second year at Oregon. And I remember that was an interesting day as well, because we were in New York, which is always like the funnest trip that we took outside NCAAs for indoor track.
Definitely.
Yeah, so no more Dempsey for us. We flew straight to the Big Apple to take it on, and we had a DMR the first night, and I absolutely bombed on the 800-meter leg, and I like ruined our chances. Like, that was supposed to be our shot to get a top 12 time for NCAAs, and I think I ran like 150 or 151 or something, and it was not great, and it put us on the bubble, and it was definitely like, I think for Coach Powell and myself, a disappointing result. And then I was in like a morning heat of the mile the next day. And I remember we didn't get back to the hotel until like 11:30 p.m. or something.
It was so late.
It was super late. And I remember, yeah, Coach Powell, like I said, we have a relationship where he goes a little tougher on me, and I appreciate it. And I let him know that I appreciate it. And so sometimes it like doesn't work out to my benefit all the time,
yeah,
because like, yeah, we get there and he like, we're both disappointed in my 800 performance for the DMR. And I said, I'm like, oh yeah, do you mind? Like, my race is at, I think I race at like 10 a.m. tomorrow, but the only charter bus going out to the armory is at 6, I think, or 6:30. So I'm like, do you mind if I like take an Uber at like 8:30 just so I can sleep in a bit more, because I haven't gotten dinner yet? And he goes, no, get on the bus. I'm like, oh, all right. So case closed. And so I remember that night I got dinner, I think, with Ed Chesarek and my parents and myself. And I remember it was just like a lovely dinner where I just like wasn't even thinking about racing, and I was just kind of enjoying the company. And we had a lovely dinner and went to bed probably at like 1 a.m. And I tossed and turned, so I probably didn't fall asleep until 2, and I woke up 4 hours later at 6, and yeah, hopped on the bus, and I'm like, man, am I supposed to run a race right now? Like, or what the
hell?
It was so early. I remember we all went to Starbucks, and we got like, that was like the only breakfast we could find around there, were like just those bodegas, which were like nasty as hell, or Starbucks. So like, we all swarmed to Starbucks, and I took like a nap underneath the stands at the armory, because I still had like 4 hours until I raced. But I mean, the goal remained the same. I truly believe that I could run under 4 minutes, despite my PR being 4:02 at the time. And Cooper Tier and Reed Brown were both in that race as well. And if I recall correctly, that was the first time Cooper's gone under four as well. And that was the second time Reed. Yeah, baby Reed. And so the plan was that Cooper was going to take it with, I was going to take us through, a pacer was going to take us through a K, and I was going to be right on the pacer. And then I was going to keep leading until Cooper would help out for like the last 300 meters. And I remember the pacer was on perfect. I think we were like 2 minutes or maybe 1:59 or something like that. And the pacer stepped off and I kept leading. And I realized very quickly that Cooper wasn't unfortunately going to be able to come up and help with the pacing. And Andy made that very clear on the sidelines. He's like, you got to do this. It's just you. You got to go. And so I just sort of, I kept pushing, and my folks were in the crowd. And I had some cousins from New York who were there as well. And I remember with 300 meters to go, I was hurting really bad, but I just distinctly just had a flashback to some rainy 300 meter repeats on Hayward. And I just thought to myself, like, I do 300 meter repeats when I'm tired all the time. Like, I can do this right now. And I ended up, yeah, finding another gear. And I think I ran 3:57. And I won the, it was my first collegiate win. And then Cooper and Reed both went 3:59. So that was awesome. So three ducks under 4 minutes in that race. And that was pretty magical. I don't know, like, I say that I thought I was ready to run under 4 minutes, but, I don't know. That was probably like a false confidence that I had.
Man, and 3:57, yeah, that's not just breaking 4 minutes. That is demolishing four minutes.
I blew it out of the water. I ruined it. I ruined it for everyone else.
Yeah, you really did. You made everyone else look slow, Mick, because of your 3:57.
But yeah, so that was pretty another surreal moment, just to have my folks in the crowd and to win that race, and Coach Powell yelling at me with 100 meters to go, saying that I was going to do it. And so, yeah, it was special. Yeah.
Oh, I remember that day too. Oh, Mick, this is bringing me flashbacks. I think I got last in that race, but I was living vicariously through you, Mick.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay, well, we're getting to the end of the episode now, but I just love your story. I mean, I feel like I could ask you questions all day long. But...
appreciate it. Also, I have a question for you. Should I have been drinking cold brew this whole time, or?
Well, since it's 5:15, I don't think you need to.
Okay, good.
Right, I'll forgive you this time, but maybe have some tomorrow morning.
I feel like the world should know that cold brew isn't actually being consumed during this conversation.
No, I know. Some people do. Some people do.
Right,
Dylan did last week, so.
Fair enough.
I wasn't.
All right.
So for people like you that have this dream of running at, we didn't really talk about UW, but I guess let's touch on UW for a little bit. We might go a little bit longer today, but I'm curious.
Yeah, right.
So, So when Andy decided that they were going to move him and his wife, Marisa, who was the women's coach, when they were moving to UW, like, did you even have any thoughts that you were going to stay at Oregon, or did you just know that you were going to follow them there?
Yeah, no, I mean, that was like a sleepless summer. I had no idea what I should do. I think I was torn because I had this dream to run Oregon, but I had forged this really close bond with Coach Powell, and I knew that he was like just a stand-up guy, and he was a coach that, like, he was the reason why I was at Oregon, because he totally could have, like I mentioned, he totally could have just said piss off in that first meeting, but he didn't. I think he saw something in me, and so I just, like, I conferred with like Trevor Dunbar and like Sam Prekel and like all these people in the running world who knew Andy and had run at Oregon to try and figure out how to make this decision. And then I don't know, it just kind of came back to like Steve Prefontaine, and I just thought about, I tried to think about what he would do in this scenario. And I firmly believe that he always did things his own way, and he preferred to blaze his own path. And I knew that he had a really good relationship with his coach, Bill Dellinger. And, I've heard stories about how he would do anything for Bill. And loyalty was something that he appreciated. So, yeah, I mean, I think it just sort of boiled down to trying to do something my own way and trust Coach Powell, because he trusted me and gave me the opportunity to run as a Duck. And, I don't know, it just felt right, and it still feels right, and I'm still very happy that I made this decision. I appreciate everything that Oregon gave to me, and I had an ad professor actually in the advertising school who was a guy who like came up with the phrase "once a duck, always a duck," and so like I firmly believe that, but also like I'm just so proud to be a Husky and to wear the purple and gold. And I think, I don't know, I just trust Coach Powell so much. I firmly believe he's the best coach in the NCAA, and I think he's a world-class coach. He's had like 2 milers run 350 and 349 while coaching them. And yeah, I mean, I think it was just kind of betting on myself for the next chapter. I did the collegiate chapter, and I guess in a way I sort of take my UW chapter as preparations for running post-collegiately, because that's kind of the vibe that we have up here in Seattle, is like a professional group almost.
Yeah. So what is next for you? I mean, you're going to complete your year at UW, and then what do you want to accomplish after that?
Yeah, I have this master's program that I'm going to do since COVID blew up this year. I'm going to run my last outdoor season, I decided. And then after that, I'm not thinking too much about that. It's funny because we've been talking a lot about goals and how my goals constantly were changing throughout this whole process of walking on at Oregon and coming to Washington. But I think one of the biggest ways I've developed and matured as a runner is that, I'm not so fast to set goals like I want to run professionally, or I want to get a Nike contract or an Adidas contract or whatever it might be. I'm just very content with my only goal being I want to run to my potential. And that's kind of a nice goal because it's so fluid and it doesn't have necessarily a solid endpoint. And so, yeah, right now I'm just trying to run to my potential. And if it ends up I get a contract running, then that's another dream that I'll get to live and enjoy and be grateful for. And if my potential doesn't quite get me there, then I'll keep working to fulfill that dream.
Oh my gosh, Mick, I think this has to be the best podcast so far. not Stop.
To you say not, that to everyone.
I don't. Like I feel like I have said it in the past, but this one I feel like will change people's like perspective on running and change people's lives. And like running wise.
I don't especially. Know about lives, yeah, but hopefully.
Well, like
it does,
running careers. Like running careers, I think it will. I mean, it just shows like the true tenacity that you have, and it has seriously inspired me, like as an athlete over the years, just like getting to know you. And now, I mean, today, just hearing like the whole full story, it is really, really inspiring. So
thank you. Yeah. I mean, if like, I don't know, I really do hope that some high school runners just, I don't know, don't give up on themselves, because there's literally like no difference between me being a 4:35 miler going into senior year and any other 4:35 miler. Like there's nothing inherent about me that meant for this to happen. Aside from the fact that I just refuse to, I don't know, give up. And so hopefully if anyone listens to this, then they'll take that message. I don't know. Like it's literally that banal platitude of like, you can achieve anything you put your mind to is very much true. And I don't know, you just have to have the tenacity to keep putting your mind to it, you know?
Do you have any quotes that you live by like day to day? Seems like you're kind of a quote guy.
Let's see. Let me think. I don't know. I mean, like, of course, to give anything less than your best is to sacrifice a gift. That's a quote that has changed, like the meaning from I think about it a lot, and I have that poster on my wall right now. And I don't know. That's just such a multi-purpose quote. It can mean so many different things. You know, Pri's a bloody guru. So that's probably a quote that I appreciate a lot. And then also there's that whole, credo, Jack London's credo. I can read that for you if you'd like, cause I have it with me.
I don't even know what that is, but
it's like a poem that Jack London wrote.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. Let me find it.
I hear you flipping the pages.
Yeah. We're getting like this SMR. Is that what it is? SMR?
ASMR.
ASMR. Just like
ASMR reading. Here we go.
All right. I would rather be ashes than dust. I would rather that spark burn out in a brilliant blaze than it should be stilled by dry rot. I'd rather be a superb meteor, every atom of me magnificent glow, than a sleepy and permanent planet. The proper function of man is to live, not to exist. I shall not waste my days trying to prolong them. I shall use my time. And so that's like something that, I don't know, I try to live by.
Oh my God, Nick, I'm about to go for a bike ride. I'm going to go so hard. Like
get
I'm.
It.
Yeah, I'm literally going to go get after it after this podcast. This was so inspiring.
Wonderful.
Well, to close out the podcast, where can people follow you and see your journey?
Yes. Well, my Instagram is, it used to be Mixed Anna, but now it's Juice Meister. Don't ask.
And it's, I'm not going to.
All right. It's JUICEMEISTER underscore. Or is that, yeah, underslash or whatever.
Underscore, yeah.
Yeah, and then my Twitter is Mick Stana. I think there's like an underscore in between Mick and Stana, S-T-A-N-A. And yeah, and LinkedIn, if you want to get professional with it.
I'm on LinkedIn as well. Little connections on there.
Yeah, networking. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the podcast. Everyone go give Mick a follow, and I'm sure everyone that listens to this will be rooting for you and are inspired by your story. So thank you again for coming on.
Well, yeah, I'm grateful for the opportunity. And yeah, I'm proud of this empire that you've, this social media empire that you've built, Emma.
Empire.
I love it. I love it.
Well, on that note, can we get a good old peace out, fellas, to close out the pod?
All right. Peace out, fellas.
Thank you guys so much for listening to today's episode of Convos Over Cold Brew. This week's shout out goes to Sam C. Thank you so much for supporting the podcast. I give one of my supporters a shout out in every single episode, so it means a lot to me, and it really helps the podcast if you support through the Anchor platform. The link is in the show notes. It's basically a monthly donation of 99 cents a month, $4.99 or $9.99. So if you really like the podcast, that helps me out so much to keep this podcast going, because I just want to keep growing it, and I really appreciate all the support that you've given me so far. And one of the free ways that you can show support is just by rating and reviewing the podcast on Apple Podcasts. That actually helps me out so, so much in growing the podcast. I love hearing your guys' feedback in the reviews, and it's a super easy and free way to help the podcast if you like listening to it every week. That means a lot. Also, just telling your friends about it, spreading the word. The goal I have with the podcast is basically just to share people's stories. Like, I love listening to people's stories in the running world and beyond. I'm definitely going to expand eventually, but getting my friends on the podcast and sharing their amazing stories, it's just been so great so far, and I'm really glad that you guys have resonated with them or appreciated them. Thank you guys so much for listening again, and I will hear from you guys in the next one. Peace out, fellas.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.